Blog Talk Radio.
John Talk Radio tonight, and I think we're going to rock the boat. I'm not too sure. My guess is Lou Babinga. Lou, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's going on, John?
It's going good, man. Thanks so much for being on. I really appreciate it, and I think we're going to have a good time. So how are things going, Lou?
Could be better, could be worse, not bad. I'm actually feeling a little better. I was kind of sick for the last couple of weeks, so I'm glad I'm a little more perky for the show tonight, and glad to talk to you.
Yeah, it's always something about this time of year. I always debate, you know, whether to get the flu shot or not, and then I get it, and I get sick, and then I don't get it, and I get sick, so I'm not sure if I should get it.
Right, yeah. Nah.
So, it's just
I refuse to get those shots.
Yeah. Well, you never know. I mean, it's one of those things where you know, you get it, and then I get sick, and then they say, "Oh no, you won't get sick," and I do. But it's one of those. It's a crapshoot this time of year. I don't know. I would imagine it's pretty close. You know, in the St. Louis area, as it is out here in Ohio, it can get warm, and then it can get cold, and then you never know what's going on. But thanks for joining the show tonight. So we want to talk about Kale too. We want to talk about, you know, what's going on now with the band and also, you know,
sure,
your career. If you could, let's start off, if you could introduce the current lineup of Kale too and just kind of go through that and what's going on with the band right now.
Sure. It's myself, Screamin' Randy Beeman on lead guitar. We have the great John Gillespie playing bass and doing background vocals for us, working with us on this CD. A guy named Dane Galloway playing drums on most of it, although we had Alvin Taylor do a couple of tracks for us.
Oh, wow.
Unfortunately, there were some problems with technical difficulties with him, and it looks like we'll probably only be able to use one of the tracks that we worked with him on. But still, that was pretty fun. And then Dave Nichols is sang on some of it, but, you know, we got a few surprises whenever it does finally get finished, this second CD. It's been taking forever.
Now, when you talk about how the band started out and that, you know, who was in it and the whole beginning of it.
Sure. Sure. I started playing with a guy named Kenny King way back in the late 70s, and we went through various name changes and people and all of that, but we pretty much played together from, I would say, 76 to about 2009. And Kenny decided that he wanted to do some other things, so we let him go. And the name of the band at that point in time was King and Louie. So it was King Louie. And we had a pretty big gig coming up, so we had to call it something. So we didn't want to alienate too many people, so we just changed it to KL2. And that's kind of how that happened.
Yeah, I'm always interested in band names. I mean, I don't know if you're like me, Lou, but I always see band names in everything. You know, like everything.
Oh, sure.
I'll say that to my wife. That'd be a great band name. And but I
oh,
think
sure.
It's, yeah, it's cool. I think it's always interesting though how, you know, how people connect and take so much time to put a band name together. But when it's actually, to me, it's not that important at all. Because what people connect with is the music, and you could call yourself
right.
Anything. Yeah, I mean, it's like it doesn't really matter. I mean, it's like
how it came up with the King Louie was the singer Tyrone back in the day. He they'd say, "Who are you playing with?" He'd say, "King and Louie," and so that's kind of stuck. And I wasn't thrilled about it, but post toasties is taken, so you know, it's kind of how that came about.
Yeah, and I think it's cool. Like, it's one of those things where it can take a long time to come up with a name, but I usually just go with, like, if you hear the band and then, you know, that's it, no matter what they call themselves. It's all about the sound and the music. So talk about how did you get started, Lou, with playing the guitar? I mean, when did you start playing at an early age?
I would say, I mean, I've always been a music nut my entire life. Just as far back as I could ever remember, you know, I'd be in the kitchen with a little transistor radio and, you know, just waiting for the next Yardbird song to come on or Beatles or something like that. And
yep.
I had a little plastic guitar with four rubber band strings. And, I remember watching a Beatles cartoon on a Saturday morning, and the little girl next door came over, and I did my worst rendition of Can't Buy Me Love on the rubber band guitar. And she went, ooh and ah, and I was like, this is a job for me. And
you were sold at that point.
I took the guitar, and it was Christmas time, and I was about 9. And my mom says, you got to throw that guitar away. And they watched me go all the way out to the trash receptacle and throw it away, and then as soon as it got dark, I went out there and stole it back out of the trash receptacle and stole it under my bed. That later that night, my dad was like, hey, you know, Santa Claus was here and he left you something, you know, in this big old box in there. So I opened it up. It was a real guitar.
Oh, wow.
You know, mom had saved up her S&H green stamps and got me a real guitar. And so I was just thrilled as I could be, and of course I had to come clean with my parents. Oh boy, I did throw that guitar away, but it's actually underneath the bed. So.
Somehow
so,
it got under the bed. And, great.
Somehow it got back out of the trash, and they said, "We know, we watched you." So you're, you know, you can't fool them as much
you
as you try.
No, you can't fool Santa Claus, Lou. I've learned that.
No, you cannot. You cannot do that. So my dad had actually played in his younger days, and by the time I was that old, he had had problems with his hands and everything. But the good thing was that they bought me a Mel Bay book of chords, and my dad actually tuned the guitar for me, and he was able to do that. And, you know, from there on, at least I had chords and was in tune and just kind of went from there.
Now, do you remember, Lou, what kind of guitar that first one was?
No, I do not. It was just some... It was a cheap, ratty thing. I tell you, I actually stopped playing for a while because I could make regular chords, but I couldn't do a bar chord. And I knew for the rock music, you had to learn how to make a bar chord, and that the strings were so high off of it that it just hurt so bad that there was just like, I just can't do this. And so I actually stopped playing guitar for a year or two, and then I got a better guitar and was able to do it. Went to a friend's house. He had an electric guitar there. His older brother did, and a big old Marshall amp and stuff plugged
wow.
it in. And yeah. It was a Gold Top Les Paul and a Marshall. So I got in there and banged around. And he played drums, and he was like, "Man, that sounds like the Who." I was like, "Yes, it does." So I was hooked once again.
He had Santa Claus treated him pretty good. You know, that's always interesting because when you start off in bands, you know, thinking about like your first band you were in, Lou, and there's always
sure.
somebody that has, you know, most of the kids around in this area didn't have a lot of great equipment, but
sure.
it have silver tones and stuff like that. But there's always somebody that had some good equipment. And did you ever run into people like that, Lou, that would have like you're talking about the Marshall?
Oh, sure.
But they
couldn't
play.
Sure. And that's what I mean. I actually would run into people, you know, in the town above us, which was a little more well-to-do suburb, and, you know, they all those little rich kids had good stuff, so I would always hang around and use what I could. And then I met some guys in high school that were from a town, probably a good 20, 30 miles away. And they used to ride the bus to our school for vocational school, and met up with them guys, and they had a little combo going that was mostly blues and Canned Heat and stuff like that, and just get in there and do the boogie and play the blues. And so I hooked up with those guys when I was about 15 or so, and, you know, so that was really kind of the first exposure of being in a band that I actually had. And from there, it was all magic.
Yeah, and I love that part because I can remember when I played in a band for the first time too, Lou, and it was like there's something incredible about it. You were talking about the bar chords, and I was
sure.
always – yeah, and I want to talk about that too because, you know, I always think that – I think of Dave Davies a lot, you know, when I think of that kind of music.
Sure,
and how
sure.
he influenced me with that sound that I had heard a lot of music before, but I thought what sound he was making on You Really Got Me and All Day and All Night was just phenomenal. And
yeah, and that's the stuff that always grabbed me was the Kinks, the Yardbirds, the Who. You know, of course I love the Beatles, but you know, that harder edge stuff was the stuff that really grabbed me, you know, from an early age.
Yeah, and I also wanted to talk about you were mentioning your transistor radio and how you would wait for the music to come on.
Oh, sure.
And I was talking to a musician, I don't know if it was last week or the week before, and how that right now in the music world, Lou, in 2014, you know, kids can listen to millions of songs. They can listen to any song they
sure.
want to at any time they want to. But
right,
I remember
right.
being, you know,
oh,
with my
no.
radio. Yeah, and waiting till my song I wanted to hear all the time was House
yeah.
of the Rising Sun by the Animals, and I loved that
sure.
song. And I
sure,
couldn't...
no, I had to wait for Winchester Cathedral to get over to, for the Pleasant Valley Sunday to start, you know what I mean?
Oh,
you know,
that's
for
funny.
The one good song, you know, I'd have to listen to the Supremes, but that's the way radio was back then, you know what I mean? Much like, you know, TV, you only had three channels, you know what I mean? And not...
Oh, yeah.
You know, endless variety. Yeah, kids, in one way I envy them, and another way I don't, because, number one, the music's not as good. Number two, being forced to listen to other things, you pick up on it, you know?
Oh, I totally agree with you. I've thought about, I was, you know, I really feel fortunate to be, you know, in that part of music where I was growing up, because I was there in the 60s listening to music that was breaking, and you know, YouTube, it was breaking ground. It had never been done before. And it was a lot of the stuff today, Lou, is reproduced music. They're trying to sound
sure.
like the Beatles. They're trying to sound like the Rolling Stones. They're trying to sound like Eric Clapton. But, you know, it's good. I mean, I haven't a problem with it. But I can
remember. I travel across town, and a kid showed me my first lick, which was Secret Agent Man by Johnny Rivers.
Oh, yeah?
And then I had, like I said, I was pretty good at regular chords. So I had another kid across town that showed me that if I took that G, C, and D chord, that I could play Creedence Clearwater songs. And I was like, well, doggone, this ain't nothing to this. And from there, I was gone, you know. Of
yeah.
course, House of the Rising Sun, that's like, you know, in the first half a dozen songs you learn.
Yeah, we learned Louie Louie was our very first song we learned.
Sure.
It was a little harder than we thought it was going to be. And Hang On Sloopy and...
oh, yeah, when they put that fourth chord in there, that messes you up, man.
It's like you have to go back, and the whole group's like looking at each other. And I think it's awesome to talk about this because things were going on over in the country, in St. Louis and Columbus, in every little town, every garage had a band in it. And it was such an exciting time. And I can remember, do you remember your first gig, Lou, when your band played in front of people?
I don't really remember my first gig, but I do remember some local bands around that played like some teen dances and that kind of thing. And I would sneak around outside and watch them. And, you know, I remember very clearly this band that had some guys from the neighborhood and stuff, and they were playing like, The Birds, I'll Feel a Whole Lot Better When You're Gone. And I was like, wow, that's a great song, and they don't play that one on the top 40 radio here.
Right.
So it was right away I learned, like, hey, there's a lot of good songs that aren't getting played on the radio that maybe aren't hits. And, you know, kind of, you know, it just struck a chord with me right away that, you know, there's music, good, really good music that I'm not hearing.
Oh, exactly. And that's where, I don't know about your area, I think it probably would have been, you know, the same. But here in Columbus, we had the AM stations, and then they had WCOL-FM, and they would play, like, The Doors, and you talked about Canned Heat, and they would talk about
sure.
and that was stuff, Lou, that nobody was playing anywhere. And I thought that was
My dad got me a small portable FM radio, and I would say the later part of 1969. And like you say, it was like I had heard Light My Fire a million times on the local AM station, KXOK. And then I heard this other station, and this song went on for 7 minutes. I was like, well, wait a minute. There's lots of stuff I'm not hearing.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you a funny story. I played different bands, and whenever there come a concert to Columbus, I wanted to go. I didn't even a lot of times, Lou, I wouldn't even know who they were, but it was this is a pretty interesting a connection. The show opened up with the Association, and you know, Along Comes Mary and all that. So
mm-hmm.
they were big, and then they opened for Canned Heat, which we've talked about. And
right.
So when the Association came on, they're like all these, you know, really great harmonies, and their sound was real tight, and they were, you know, I don't know if they were lip syncing or not, but they sounded like the record pretty much, and they were really good. And then here comes, you talk about the big Marshall amps, dude. They brought in the Marshalls, and Canned Heat just like your ears are bleeding. And that
the
was
first
my
concert
first...
I went to was in 1970 at the Mississippi River Festival, which is a big outdoor thing at Southern Illinois University in Edwardsville. Went on for probably about 10 years, but I seen them in 1970. A friend of mine's mom took us to see Iron Butterfly.
Oh, wow.
So we were in about the 12th row watching Iron Butterfly. His mom, honest to God, was knitting like booties or something over there next to us. So quite an interesting first show.
Oh, that's great. And I can remember it. Like, the second show I saw was Vanilla Fudge and,
mm-hmm.
oh, gosh, they were really good, man. They were awesome. They were, like, amazing.
Oh, sure.
And then,
I'm friends with all those, with Vince and with Carmen.
Oh, isn't that amazing how that they
mm-hmm.
just I love that band because they took this incredible soulful sound that was just, you know, was amazing, and then put this like psychedelic rock to it that
Right.
yeah, that just was
Oh,
really
yeah, big
different.
difference between the Supremes keep me hanging on and the Fugees keep me hanging on. Yeah,
Yeah, I
that's a
just
fact.
love that. Oh yeah. So
Yeah,
you're
well, lucky enough, like I say, throughout the years, I've actually been able to meet many, many, many of my heroes from back then, and you know, been lucky enough to actually work with some of them, and you know, I say it's just been a blessing. A lot of times, I pinch myself or I look at all the signatures on my guitar case and say, "How the hell did that happen?"
I think that's awesome. So when was like when you went started going to the concerts, which was the concert, Lou, that blew your mind? It was the most amazing thing at that point.
You know, I went to so many. You know, concerts were very affordable back then, $4, $5, $5.50. I seen the Rolling Stones and Stevie Wonder. We had fourth row seats for $5.50. Stevie Wonder opened the show,
Oh my
and
God.
So I mean, you know, no, there's just too many to even, you know, some of the standouts were. I seen Pink Floyd 2 weeks before Dark Side of the Moon came out in '73. That was a big one. Mott the Hoople and Queen in '74. That was another big show for me.
Wow.
Yeah, a lot of, I mean, I literally went to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of shows because it didn't take much back then.
Now,
You
did
know,
Mott the
you could sit
Hoople
in the
open?
cheap seats for $3.50.
Yeah, I can remember that. But to me, the problem with that was it was a lot of money for me to get for my parents to go, and I had to do a lot of begging
Dude, I cut a lot of lawns. I cut a lot of lawns between my vinyl habit and my concert habit. I was, you know, I spent a lot of summers cutting grass, brother.
Now, was did Mott the Hoople open for Queen?
Queen opened for Mott the Hoople. They played about
Oh,
25
gosh.
minutes. It was the tour for their first album. And so. Yeah, and then I moved around quite a bit, you know, once I got out of high school. So, you know, I'm lucky enough that I've been just about everywhere and, you know, seen bands in just about every kind of venue you can think of. I saw Peter Green at the Fillmore West, and I was like, boy, this is as close to seeing Jerk Jesus in the Sistine Chapel for me, you know, at
Oh,
the
he's a, it
Fillmore
was
West.
amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm at the Fillmore West. I'm thinking about everybody that played there. I'm seeing a guitar player that I never thought I'd see again, you know, and he got himself, you know, well enough to play, and you know, I was just blown away.
Yeah, you know, that's a great. I love that. And I was thinking of a concert I saw. It was probably 71, maybe 70 or 71, where Jethro Tull opened for Black Sabbath.
Oh yeah. Yeah, no, I've seen Tull a bunch of times. I've seen Sabbath. I've seen, you know, anybody that was around, Led Zeppelin. I seen them in actually in California in '75. I was I spent the summer out there working. My sister lived out there, and couldn't get tickets in L.A. where they had sold out 5 nights. But my buddies procured some tickets for San Diego, which is a 100-mile drive. And so we drove down there and seen them, and you know, needless to say, it's Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, see, I never
They're not
got to see
bad.
them. Yeah, I've heard they're pretty good. I
Yes.
never did get a chance to see them, but I thought that would be great. Well, why don't we take a music break, Lou, and we'll play the song you sent me, "Time Machine." And would
Okay,
you
yeah,
like?
that's one of the new ones that we're working on, and that one's pretty well done. That one and the Two-Way Ride are two of the new ones.
Okay, let's play that. My guest is Lou Babenga, and we're talking about his career with music and KL2. And you can, what's the website, Lou? Do you know what it is? Is it
The best way is to look us up on Facebook. It's World's Best Band KL2. Unfortunately, we couldn't change the name to just straight KL2, and when the page was open, and so you know, you might have to look under the W's for the KL2, but World's Best Band KL2 on Facebook is your best bet.
And we'll be right back. We'll continue my conversation with Lou. We'll be right back after this, so stick around. Luba Benga. We're talking music. We're talking rock music. We're talking KL2. We're talking new music coming out from the band. And we just heard Time Machine. And Lou, let's talk a little bit about the what makes a good band. I think that's a good question to ask someone that's been in music for a while. Bands come and bands go. You get in good bands. You get in bands that click. You get in bands that don't. What is it that makes a good band? What is the ingredients that you look for, Lou, when you know that you're going to be in a band that's going to produce good music and you're going to enjoy being in?
Boy, I wish I knew that, the answer to that one. You know, I just do what I do. I've been writing songs forever and a day, and the best thing I can do is find people that have a similar background as far as what they enjoy and what they like, and, you know, go from there. I'm not reinventing the wheel here. You know, if you've heard this band or that band, then you've heard pretty much what I kind of do, and we just go from there.
Now, describe your sound when you what some of your influences were, and then we want to kind of get into gear talk a little bit and talk about, you know, the what you use as tools to make that sound. But who were some of the early guitar players, Lou, that you liked that influenced the style of play that you have?
You know, it's not just guitar players, it's songwriters, you know, really that you know, kind of draw me in right away. I'm a big Ian Hunter fan. He was just here a couple weeks ago, got to hang out and talk with him for a bit. You know, he did a nice show here. You know, it's people like that, you know, maybe the industry hasn't treated so well, but yet they've managed to just keep on keeping on. And when they tell you're on the right track, then you know, you're doing well, regardless of sales or airplay or anything else. To me, having peer respect is much more important for me. As far as, you know, I always liked a band from England, Status Quo. They were really always big on my, you know, boogie band kind of list, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I remember having the Grand Funk Railroad live album and that my aunt bought me because, of course, I asked for double albums for my birthday. They were $5.99, and you know, so I would buy the single ones for $3.99. But come Christmas and birthday, I would ask relatives for the double records and go with that. Like I say, there's a lot of influences in me that most people either you know don't know or you know, obscure. We were covering with Kenny King back in the 70s. We were covering the Scorpions and AC/DC when nobody knew who in the world is this band, you know. And a lot of times they thought those songs were songs that we wrote because it wasn't stuff getting played on the radio and wasn't stuff that was familiar. Of course, now everybody and his brother knows them, you know. But in 1977 or whatever, you know, there wasn't really anybody else playing that kind of stuff.
And I think that's a pretty cool thing because there's always going to be people playing music that, you know, other people haven't heard. But I want to go back. You said you had a chance to talk to Ian Hunter. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah, several times now. I've actually been lucky enough to actually hang out with him for the last three or four tours. And, you know, that guy is just super inspiration for me. You know, off the first album, we had the song The Boat that you played to open the show with.
Right.
At the time, the first time that I got to meet him, I only had the one song done, had it burnt on a CD, and gave it to him on a Friday night. He played two shows Friday and Saturday and went down Saturday evening to his dressing room, and he had it playing a little boombox. And I walked into the room, and he's sitting there singing my song, and
oh wow,
you know, saying that's a really rocking little record. I was like, well, I'm done right now. You know.
Stick a fork in me. Oh, that's
sure.
And that means a lot. I mean, I'm just kind of curious when you talk to somebody like Ian and some of the people you've talked to. What are some of the questions you ask them? And with all of the, like, all the history they have and all of the background that they have, there's still that question right now in 2014 of where does that music fit? Because a lot of stations won't play it. You know, their new music that's coming out by some of the
right.
Classic rock guys, they don't know where to put their music. They haven't completely understood the, you know, the digital revolution. How do you get a lot of hits, but it doesn't, you know, it doesn't always cause money to come in. What
sure.
are some
one
of the things?
My,
yeah,
one
what
of the best
Ian's
pieces
take?
Of advice that I ever got is from a guy that I love dearly. He's a blues artist named Larry McRae. And the best piece of advice I ever got from anybody was that some people will like what you do and some people that won't like what you do no matter what you do. And he's like, you play to the ones that you do like it and the other ones, F them. and I was like, that is profound as anything Buddha ever said to me anyway.
Well, you got to look at it the point when I've done this show. This is going to my seventh year, and I've talked to quite a few musicians. And when I ask them the question, you know, what would define success for you? And then I always ask them, you know, why do you do that? Because sometimes it can get tough as a musician if you're on the road and you go to a gig and there's not that many people there, and
sure.
you know, and the bar saying, hey, how are we going to cover the bartender? How are we going to do this? And it becomes like this. Now it's taken this thing that you love, and it's making it into business and dollars and cents and all that. And I ask them, what is it that, you know, you get back in the van and you do it again? And almost all of them said, yeah, they said it's,
well,
that response back that they get.
It is, and that's it. And for me, like I say, a lot of it for me is the fact that the first album got played on several hundred radio stations around the world. You know, things like that, you know, that you just never expected. And to get a lot of respect, you know, from different people. I mean, you know, people I'd never heard of and admired my whole life. Dennis Dunaway from the Alice Cooper Group, you know,
yeah,
was like, boy,
right.
You guys are a tight band and all that. Not everybody can hang. So, like, the guys that played on that first album, you know, they decided that, you know, it's easier to go out and play cover music and make, you know, their little bit of money that they can, you know, and to them, you know, that was more important than actually carrying on with your own original ideas, you know. So, you know, wish them all the best, you know, but I got to keep on doing what I do. You know, I'm an old guy that for me to go out and play, oh, Sammy Hagar songs for $100 a night just doesn't ring true to me.
Yeah, that brings up a great point, because I know people that right now make a pretty good living doing Kiss.
Tribute bands, oh yeah, sure.
Motley Crue, the tribute bands, and they make a lot of money. Now, and they also, I think that's kind of, it's just me, Lou, but I think it's a little bizarre. It's kind of cool, and yet it's kind of weird, because you're getting response back, but that's not from you. I mean, you're actually,
correct,
the art of it would be that you can recreate it. It's like, you know, painting a Picasso or something. You can do that.
Right.
That's really cool, but it's not you. You know, that's I really get what you're saying there, because you get out there and, like, if you have one person, I mean, having Ian Hunter playing your music is just amazing. But having one person say, yeah, that's, that's good rock and roll. That's got to be just,
sure,
kind of,
I was in
thing,
a band out in Virginia back in the 90s called Butcher Boy, and we wrote a song, you know, a week or so earlier, and then we were gigging pretty heavily, and, you know, the next gig that we got out, there was a song we had to have a little sing-along part, and people were singing my words back to me, and I was just like, are you kidding me? It's one of them deals where, you know, quiet the band down and let them go, you know, and everybody in the audience is singing your words back to you. Well, there's no price that covers that, you know.
No, I agree with you. That's got to be an amazing feeling. Let's play the song you sent. We're going to go back in the time machine, Lou, and play "Dust My Broom," the song that you sent me. Talk about that a little bit, and what era that was, and what age or what year that was.
Yeah, that was early 1980, and we didn't really do any cover songs in that band but that one blues song. And I happened to have a recording off of an old VHS tape, which is why the quality's not that great, but, you know, it shows the influence, you know what I mean? We've been playing the blues for a long time, too, so, you know, that song, it comes from 1980. The only cover song that we did in that entire set, everything else was originals. So I've been playing originals, really, as long as I can remember.
Well, let's play this. This is Lou's song, and this is from, what was the name of the band at that point, Lou?
At that point, on that particular gig, it was the Kenny King Band. But, you know, it was, like I say, it kind of went back and forth. We started off as a band called Physical Action and, you know, kind of flipped around names here and there and everywhere. So this was actually Kenny's project that, you know, he had done an album in the studio that I helped him with. And, like I say, this was the only cover tune we did, the old Elmore James standard, Dust My Broom.
And here we are. We'll be right back after this on John Talk Radio.
Sure does. Kenny is one of the finest guitar players I ever played with in my life. He still is to this day. You know, there's just the guy can play anything, and he's been going through some health problems and everything, but I love him to death like a brother. Like I say, we played together for over 30 years, so, you know, kind of miss having him over there. But that being said, you know, we've had some excellent guitar players, you know, that had to fill his shoes, and ask any one of them, Screaming Randy Beeman would be number one. He would tell you that, you know, trying to copy Kenny King's licks is not the easiest thing in the world to do.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, it's like, just from what I've heard is really amazing. It's very good. Let's talk a little bit, Lou, about the songwriting. You talked about that's something that's very important to you is your songwriting. How did it start out, and what is the style of songwriting that – how does that work with you? I mean, it's different with everyone I've talked to, but
– yeah, each and every one comes in a different way. Sometimes you'll just be fooling around on the guitar and have a little piece that comes up with, you know, something, and you'll have to write some words to it. Other times you'll come up with a title or something or a line and go from that right from there and then kind of get a rhythm in your head and then try to go back and figure something to go along with it. We've got a song on this new one called Somebody's Trying to Sell Me Something. And basically woke up one morning and everything on TV was an infomercial and everything on the radio was like a commercial. Yep. And stuff, and I was like, man, from the time I wake up, from the time I go to bed, somebody's trying to sell me something. I'm like, write that down.
Yep.
And so that became a song, which will be on the new record.
You know, and I like that style because when I talk to people, I had Bugsy Klein on last week, and we were talking about his songwriting, and he was talking about how that he's gone back into the Americana, into, you know, the early blues, and how that the music meant something. I mean, when they wrote something, they were writing it for real. This wasn't something that, you know, they were thinking about sound. How does that affect you also, Lou?
It's like I totally enjoy, like you had Michael Finley on before, and, right. You know, people like Neil Young and stuff. I just love their songwriting, but, you know, that real personal type of touch that they had. But, you know, unfortunately, I just can't really seem to write in that style. You know, my style is pretty much straight out rock with a little bit of blues in it. And, you know, I can't call my style anything other than rock. You know what I mean? It's not singer-songwriter type of, you know, Gordon Lightfoot kind of music. You know, it's not that kind of thing.
Yeah, and I understand that, because sometimes it's like, to me, one of the interviews that I had, and are you familiar with Randy Holden, the guitar player?
Sure, from Blue Chair, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I love him. I think he's one of the best guitar players.
Sure, he's fantastic. I was just a little kid and remember seeing their videos on Summertime Blues and things like that, and was like, wow, this is different.
And he still plays, and he's putting out some pretty amazing
sure.
stuff. But when I would talk to him about that, you know, he would just – there wasn't a formula. He just said he starts playing and things just start happening. He writes it down. And I think it's really amazing how that was happening. I was just curious of how it worked with you, Lou.
Well, the only kind of formula I have is I know that it's somewhere in the middle, it needs a middle bit, you know what I mean? And you got to leave room for these burning guitar players that I always play with time to – you know, show their stuff. And so, you know, other than that, you know what I mean? I can do whatever I want to, but I, you know, I always try to leave space so that the other guys can shine. You know what I mean? John Gillespie, who you've had on your show.
Yeah.
Awesome. You know, excellent bass player, excellent singer and vocalist, you know, and you just don't tell guys like that, well, play it like this or play it like that. You pretty much have to just trust your instincts that you know that they're good enough to do what they do.
Yeah,
and that's what I do.
That's...
I try to keep my stuff simple and and everybody else can complicate it up.
Well, I think you've hit a you know, we were talking about, Lou, how, you know, what it took to put a good band together, and I think you're answering that question. It's like you're working together, you know. You're trying to find the talents and the skills and the strengths of the band members, and I think that's
sure.
That's awesome. Now let's talk a little bit. Yeah, I want to hit on gear, because I know we don't have a whole lot of time. That's 12 minutes or so. But talk about
This is going to be a very, very short conversation. I've got a Marshall JCM 800, and ever since I got my Music Man Eddie Van Halen guitar, that's been my number one guitar. I can beat on it for hours, and it doesn't go out of tune. Rarely breaks a string. when it does, you know, I have you know, other guitars as, you know, backups or whatever, but my Gibson Flying V for my main guitar. And that's when you got a Gibson Flying V for your string breaker guitar, well, then that's how much I love the other one.
Oh, that's amazing. Do you have a lot? Do you collect guitars? Do you have a lot?
Yeah, you know, I had a problem there for a little while. I have to admit. You know, but I whittled them down from, you know, about 65 to about 20 or so now. And, you know, you don't need them a lot in concert, but need them a lot for recording. You know what I mean? You need different sounds, different textures for recording. So, you know, that's pretty much how that works.
So if the, you know, the proverbial – you know, desert island, if you could just take one guitar, which it would be the...
I've got mine with about 200 signatures on the case. Everybody from Martin Barr to Jeff O'Toole and, you know, you name it, just about everybody. I mean, Joe Bonamassa, you know, Audley Freed from Cry of Love and the Black Crows, and gosh, I can't even think of them all. There's a couple of hundred signatures on there, and I've been lucky enough to meet them and hang out with them, and you know, everywhere I go, I take a little bit of that magic with me.
Now, how about vinyl? Do you collect vinyl?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I ridiculous amounts. Ridiculous, copious amounts.
I kind of thought you might. So, let's say the house is on fire, Lou's got to grab one record and run out the door. What's it going to be?
The records can stay. The guitar's got to go. The guitar and the amp got to go. Everything else, you know what I mean, can be pretty much replaced as far as albums go. I mean, I have so many that, you know, I've actually, they're all replaceable. You know what I mean?
What's your favorite one?
Oh my gosh! I don't know. I mean, one of the first ones that I ever bought with my own grass cutting money was Led Zeppelin II, and so that'll always hold a special place in my heart.
Now, do you have one of the original ones vinyl of that?
Oh sure.
Yep.
And then I remember at Christmas time the very next year, my mom bought me Led Zeppelin III for Christmas, and so. You know, anytime there's a new one, I would have it.
Now, what year did Led Zepp 2 come out?
That came out in 69. I probably didn't get my copy till the summer of 70.
You know, I was thinking that because when I was in high school, I think I was going into my senior year, my English teacher, we live real close to Columbus and Ohio State University, and they would bring in student teachers, you know, and it was mm-hmm. at the end of the year, and I can't remember her name, Lou, but she brought in her turntable and played Led Zeppelin II for us, and we're a bunch of, you know, country boys.
Yeah.
We didn't know what was going on. It was like,
it
was so amazing. What is
no, I had a friend of mine that had a 57, 58 Chevy Nomad with an 8-track player in it. And, of course, you know, that was one of the first ones where I noticed panning, you know, to the left, to the right, to the left, to the right, you know, like in the guitar solo Heartbreaker or whatever. I was like, whoa, you know, that was my first thing of stereo effect, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
because even though you had stereo records like the Beatles or whatever, the vocals were on one side, the music was on the other or whatever. But that one there kind of went back and forth, and that one, Eddie Kramer engineered that one to let you know that this was something different, you know.
Yeah, I agree with you. It was, and I can remember. Like I go back and I think of the first time you experienced when I got that album, and I put that
mm-hmm.
on in the living room of my house where, you know, my grandmother was there, and
sure.
They played Lawrence Welk and things like that. And I remember getting it out, putting it on the stereo in the living room and playing it. And I thought,
oh yeah,
where did that come from?
Yeah, no, that same year I got Led Zeppelin III, my mom also bought me Jimi Hendrix's Smash Hits with the poster of them up on the horses and, you know, so I've been a huge Hendrix fan too. Although I don't, nobody can play like him, and I'm just not a Fender Stratocaster guitar guy. I like when other people play him, but for me, they don't work.
Yeah,
I've always had that Gibson.
Yeah, there's just something, Lou, about that music and about that era that I don't think it'll ever come around again.
No,
I might be
it'll
wrong.
It'll never come again.
Yeah.
Nope, those days are gone, and they are not coming back.
Now, if you could pick one of your I don't think we covered this. What was your let's go back to what was your favorite concert you ever were in, and then let's also talk about what's the favorite gig you ever played in.
Oh, you know, I went to so many. I would have to rate that Pink Floyd show that was 2 weeks before Dark Side of the Moon came out way up there. The quadraphonic version was leaked to the radio station, so you'd actually had heard a little bit of it before they actually played it. But the actual album wasn't out for a couple weeks left, and I would say that one was pretty well right up there. As far as shows that I played, I would have to say we did a few shows out at the Harris Casino that were just crazily attended, and, you know, it was... you know, those were some, they treated us very well, paid us really good. And, you know, I got to say, overall, those were probably some of the best shows, you know, funnest shows that I've actually played.
Now, we don't have much time left, but talk about, is there anything going on that you would like to tell the audience about with, you know, with KL2 or any of the stuff coming up?
Well, like I say, we've been working on this CD for quite a while now, and we're just having one stalemate after another trying to get it done. But hopefully you can play another one before we get out of here. You can play Two-Way Ride, which is, we're hoping it's going to do a little something for us. And other than that, like I say, it'll be done when it's done.
And it's always, I talk to a lot of people that are putting it together. What do you think it's the pluses and the minuses of recording music in 2014? And what was it like maybe 20, 30 years ago?
You can make a fairly decent recording at home now, But
right.
Back in the day, you had to lug your stuff down, and there were tape flips and tape operators and so on and so forth, and that, I would say that's the biggest change.
Do you think it's changed for the better?
No. You just don't get the same sound out of today's digital stuff as that you did the old analog tapes.
Yeah.
Especially guitar tones.
I agree with you, Lou. Well, Lou, it's been great talking to you. Thank you so much for being on.
Thanks a lot. Hopefully you can play Two-Way Ride for us as we get out of here. Thanks to everybody for listening. I see a lot of people on my Facebook page are tearing it up. I think you'll have it on your page to listen to again at some point in the future.
Yeah.
And always good talking to you, man. I'm glad that I was able to set you up with a few different artists, Tom Guerrera, Alvin Taylor.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know,
yep.
John Gillespie and everybody, those are all talented cats.
Really appreciate it, Lou.
Glad to play a part in that.
And we'll have to, when you get the album out, we'll have to dedicate a show and play the whole album. So we'll do
Thanks.
That.
You played most of the first album when we first started talking.
I love
on one of your
that.
Wednesday night shows. You played at least 25 minutes of it.
Yeah, I love doing that. I think it's just awesome. So it's a privilege for me to do it, and thank you so much, and thanks everyone for supporting independent musicians and for John Talk Radio, and we'll go out tonight with KL2 Two-Way Ride, and Lou, you take care, and we'll talk to you later.
Thanks, John. Talk to you soon.
Yeah.
the classes. Something in a confess about what it's gonna take. There's no easy road. Gotta make your own way.
You took the